are tuned into Lightly on the Ground Radio, produced at Richmond Independent Radio and broadcast on WRIR-LP 97.3 and worldwide at WRIR.org. That's Richmond Independent Radio. For the past few years, we've explored our food system, from a seed in a farmer's hand to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide front. We focused on what each guest brings to growing and sustaining our food system. This has included farmers talking about how they have grown and harvested their crops, and scientists discussing the impact of mining and milling uranium in the Commonwealth. In order to sustain our way of life, including our economy and our freedom, we need to maintain certain inalienable rights. Today, we are stepping into the realm of social justice, economic rights, and personal sovereignty. I'm Sunny Gardner, and Ann Hardy is here with me in the studio. Ann is a registered nurse and one of the founders and board members of the Alliance for Progressive Values. And I quote from their mission statement, an all-volunteer organization whose goal is to educate and influence the public, the media, and elected officials at the local, state, and national levels about important issues of the day. We are guided in this by our basic, common sense, progressive values of economic fairness, social justice, and good government. The Alliance can be found on Facebook and at apvonline.org. Ann, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Ann is here to throw some light on a few bills that have come before our General Assembly, their ramifications, and future actions concerning them. So let's start at the very beginning. Can you just give us an overview of the bills that have caused such question among progressive thinkers in the Commonwealth over the last month?
There are quite a few. I would say, though, the ones that have gotten the most national attention over, and it's really been in the past 2 to 3 weeks, are focused on women's reproductive health. And I would say we can start with literally the first bill, House Bill number 1, which was patroned by Delegate Bob Marshall. He is represents Prince William County here in Virginia. In summary, this bill states that unborn children at every stage of development, essentially at conception, enjoy all rights, privileges, and immunities available to other persons, citizens, and residents of the Commonwealth. So essentially we're saying that personhood begins at conception. And so why is this such a big deal? This bill really opened up a Pandora's box in so many ways. Proponents of this bill argue that the intent of the bill is to simply establish a civil cause of action for wrongful death of a fetus stemming from harm to a pregnant woman. So if any harm comes to someone while they're pregnant and a fetus happens to die or is harmed in so many ways, then that person would be opened up to criminal action. However, it's interesting that Delegate Marshall's refusal to amend the bill to clarify these ambiguities, I think that raises a lot of concern and belies that claim. Now, folks that are against this bill have concerns that it's going to open the door for the criminalization of in vitro fertilization and other types of infertility treatments, and also could potentially criminalize hormonal birth control, including the birth control pill and IUDs. These are all forms of contraception that create a hostile environment, if you will, for a fertilized egg so that it can't implant.
Oh, so the zygote can't implant, and that would be illegal under this bill?
Possibly. Now, that's not stated directly in the bill, but that's the concern, that we could it opens the door for that to happen.
Yeah. Well, tell me about the in vitro fertilization part.
Well, many couples have to go this route when they are unable to conceive on their own. Mm-hmm. And in some circumstances, the eggs are fertilized outside of the body, mm-hmm. in a laboratory situation, and then the fertilized eggs are implanted into the woman's body. Mm-hmm. And at times, if they're lucky, if you implant 5 or 6 eggs, sometimes all of those stick, or so all of those implant. So couples are then faced with a decision on whether to move ahead with having multiples in, we're talking not just twins or triplets, but possibly four or five babies, or to reduce that.
Okay. And how about if, I mean, there's some fertilized eggs are stored, correct?
That's
frozen?
Right. Frozen.
Well, what would be the status of those? Because they are, again, conceived.
Well, it's a good question. And I think, again, further concerns are raised at what do we do with those, if those fertilized eggs are frozen, then do we have to establish some sort of guardian for those eggs? And and what is the fate of those?
Well, it sounds like the bill is just not well thought out. The ramifications of the bill haven't been considered.
I would agree with that.
Have a little faith, my friend. We got to help each other through thick and thin. These are trying times that we're living in. Have a little faith, I say. Have a little faith, my friend. We got trouble everywhere around the world. There's not a safe place to for any woman, man, boy, or girl. And everywhere you turn, there's destruction and pain. You get a mouth full of promises and a hat full of rain. Just have a little faith, I say. Have a little faith, my friend. We got to help each other through thick and thin. These are trying times that we're living in. Have a little faith, I say. Have a little faith.
So House Bill 62 has crossed over to the Senate, right?
That's right.
And what's going on with that?
Well, as you said, it passed in the House. It is now in committee in the Senate. And there is hope that it could perhaps die in committee in the Senate, but we just don't know yet.
And that would be one of the things that constituents could suggest to their congresspeople.
Absolutely. There's still a lot of time to, at this point, you would be important to contact your senators and let them know how you feel about this particular bill. If it should pass through the Senate, then you would want to be notifying the governor's office of
and
your feelings.
What do you think would happen if this bill's passed?
Well, in terms of the backlash?
No, in terms of the effect that it would have on women and on families.
Well, it's interesting because one of the reasons that it may die is that it's, in terms of money, it's not a lot of money for the state. And I don't want to give you wrong information, but from my memory serves me right, I think it was an incredibly tiny amount of money out of the state's budget or out of the Board of Health's budget that went to funding of these procedures because so few are done.
Right.
So I think that it would be, while it may not affect a wide spectrum of people, it's incredibly important to those who need those services. I think, too, that, you know, if we don't provide these kind of services, we also, these, you know, a child with severe disabilities comes into the world and we don't have the infrastructure in place to serve that child. And that's something that I don't think the General Assembly this year is taking into account with this particular situation.
So it would affect a few people, but it would affect them dramatically, and it's kind of a sensational effect that it would have on them.
That's right.
But speaking of sensationalism, I think that House Bill 462 and 484 are pretty sensational in that it's so dramatic what they would be calling on doctors to do to women in order to have an abortion, but also that the governor stepped in and backed off of those two bills. Tell me what exactly went on with that.
Well, it was pretty incredible. House Bill 462, which was patroned by Kathy Byron, you know, that picked up a lot of momentum, got through the House. And, you know, I don't know exactly when the tide turned, but I think, you know, at the point where citizens became informed, all of a sudden this amazing, like, crescendo started, and women and men, but mostly women, became involved. We saw the Speak Loudly with Silence movement, which you saw on Facebook, and I think in a matter of weeks we had 2,000 people that were ready to come to the state capitol and represent their feelings about this incredibly invasive procedure that looked like it was going to happen in the state of Virginia. And people were really aghast once they got wind of what was going on. It was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Uh-huh. That's how I felt. And so 2,000 people showed up on the Capitol grounds and a peaceful protest.
That's right. Actually, I think ultimately somewhere between 1,200 and 1,400 people came. Mm-hmm. On the Facebook page, there was at least 2,000 people who showed interest. We will never know why those people didn't show up. Could have been the weather. Mm-hmm. It was a state holiday. But nevertheless, there were three individuals, one of whom we'll claim as our own from APV, Claire Tuitt, and several other individuals who had been instrumental in the Occupy Richmond movement. Put together this beautiful event called Speak Loudly with Silence, and they invited concerned citizens to gather at the Capitol on Monday, February the 20th, in a peaceful protest against many, not just the House Bill 462 and Senate Bill 484, but all of the bills that related to women's reproductive health. And so I got there very early, and I remember there was about 10 or 11 people, and I thought, oh my, you know, this might not work. And then all of a sudden, by literally every 5 minutes, another, 100 people showed up. Mm-hmm. And the line started forming down the fence line. And these people from Claire and her group, it was incredible. They were very well organized. They reminded people continuously of how to remain, lawful, respectful, gave people options should there be some sort of legal situation. And it just, it grew and it grew, and we were finally allowed to come into the Capitol grounds quietly, peacefully, stood, and in silence.
There are some amazing photographs of that.
Yeah.
Speak Loudly with Silence is the name of it, right?
That's right.
That's their Facebook page. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty amazing thing. And it must have had some influence. I was there, and I spoke with legislative aides to various Congress representatives and senators. The people in the building, in the General Assembly building, were with us. It was a very warm feeling that we got as we walked around the halls
And you can
visited
tell,
people.
As we saw the legislators and staff members coming through, which I like to call it the Soul Train line, as they came out of the General Assembly building, many of them would not give eye contact. And then many, though, who I would assume have progressive values, seem to be so relieved to finally have support. I can mm-hmm. imagine it's a very lonely place this year, should you be a delegate or a staff person with progressive values. You are not in big company this year,
right?
Down there.
Tell me what your take is on this step back from the mandatory ultrasound bills.
Well, I think after the protest, of course, there was a lot of local media attention that day, which spilled over into the national media. Rachel Maddow did several pieces on her blog and on her show. Saturday Night Live that weekend did a very funny piece, followed by Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, which really portrayed Virginia, the Virginia General Assembly, as a laughingstock. And I think we're all aware that Governor McDonnell has aspirations to become vice president. And I would imagine that this really got his attention. Mm-hmm. And whether or not his vice presidential aspirations played a part in that, I don't know. And I probably would need to ask him that. Nevertheless, it did get his attention. Mm-hmm. And the media is saying that at the advice of the Attorney General, Governor McDonnell was told that this bill potentially could run afoul of the Fourth Amendment law, which prohibits unreasonable search and seizure. So as he took a longer look at it, he realized that the possible unconstitutionality of the bill, and called his forces together. And from what we hear, that they all got together literally in the night and behind closed doors, and rethought this legislation and came up with an amended version it took out the requirement for a transvaginal ultrasound, but it did keep the requirement for an ultrasound, which would be a transabdominal procedure. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with that is a transabdominal ultrasound is not going to serve the purpose that the bill originally intended.
And which, what was that purpose?
Which was to diagnose the gestational age of the fetus, which they said would lead to better informed consent and ultimately a safer procedure for the woman undergoing the abortion. Mm-hmm. So now we've got a bill that is requiring a potentially unnecessary procedure, you know, adding to the cost and to the drama, if you will, of having to go, you know, through one of these procedures.
The transabdominal ultrasound.
So would it give the information that was needed?
Potentially it could, depending on how far along you are in your pregnancy. You know, a transabdominal ultrasound can determine gestational age, but most of the abortions that, when an abortion is done early in the pregnancy, it is nearly impossible to determine gestational age unless you have a transvaginal ultrasound. That's why it was originally, you know, that's the way the bill was originally written. So whether you agree with the bill or not in its original form, I have to say at least that bill, I didn't agree with it, but at least it made sense from a you know, a medical standpoint, because that's the procedure you really need to do.
So what do you think is the future of these medical and economic related bills about women's reproductive health? We have a large number of women we have a large number of people who are working to maintain our civil liberties.
Well, specifically, I mean, the good news is the Senate version of this transvaginal ultrasound bill, Senate Bill 484, died in the Senate. Senator Vogel, the original patron, she decided to strike it again after people started backpedaling. That one went away. House Bill 462. Passed through the House and is currently, as of today, hung up in the Senate Committee on Education and Health. Mm-hmm. Should that bill pass, and it is expected to pass, it will have to go back to the House for another vote since it is in an amended form. Mm-hmm. So again, we still have some time as concerned citizens to continue to let our representatives know. And when I say representatives, I mean your delegates from the House and Senate, as well as Governor McDonald's office. Mm-hmm. In my experience, it's very easy to contact your representatives. They, you know, the people are incredibly receptive to your opinion, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on. Mm-hmm. And again, I can't encourage people enough to take that step. It's really very positive.
So my understanding was that we had the bill was laid down for a year. Is that because it's still in the committee in the Senate?
Well, you may be referring to House Bill 1, which is the personhood bill. That was the bill we spoke of earlier that granted personhood to a zygote or a fertilized egg. And that bill was continued to 2013. And so it was laid down, so to speak, in the Senate Committee of Education and Health, and it will, you know, be resurrected in next year's session.
So we need to remain vigilant if we have strong feelings about that bill.
Absolutely.
What can we do to protect women's rights for the long term?
Well, I think the most important thing, as with most issues that we feel dearly about, is educate, educate, educate. We need to continue to educate ourselves. We need to continue to educate our communities. And as trite as this sounds, but educate our children. I know that I've had great success in talking to my teenagers about these bills, and it's really, you know, they're the future. You know, I think young girls especially, we need to be talking to the people to whom this is going to be most important in the next 15 to 20 years. So, you know, 2013 is going to be a really important election year at the state level. We are going to see 100 seats are up for grabs, so to speak, in the House of Delegates in Virginia.
Out of 140.
That's right. So while we still have to get through another session, which is essentially January through March, the election being the following November, mm-hmm. I think that next year is going to be a really important year where your delegates are going to be listening. It's an election year. Power to the people. It's time to stay vigilant.
Mm-hmm. One thing I find is really important to think about as we go about educating ourselves and educating people around us is that there is a tendency on issues of this importance, of this this level of excitement, to have very cut and dried being for it or against it. It's difficult to talk to someone who is in opposition to one's thoughts. Do you have any ideas about how to go about listening to others and learning from people who are not in agreement with you about these things? Have you had any conversations with people who are, any successful conversations with people who are opposed to what, your views?
Well, I have. I am the adult child of conservative Republicans. So at every holiday, I am fortunate enough to be surrounded by thinking people of the other side, so to speak. And so, you know, in all seriousness, I agree. I think it's essential to be fully informed, you do have to understand where the other person is coming from. And I think those conversations are extremely important to have with our friends who may think differently than we do, but to really get in there and understand from where they come and ultimately what they want. I think oftentimes we do find that we really both want much of the same thing. But it is particularly important when you're going down to speak to your representatives, or even if you're writing them or speaking to them directly, you do want to understand, you know, where they're coming from, understand fully. And it's good to ask them, ask them to explain to you.
Mm-hmm.
You
and know? Listen closely.
And listen closely.
And listen for commonalities. Well, we've often mentioned the importance of speaking to our legislators, as we were just now, and a lot of people might feel that with the importance of the upcoming General Assembly and the elections next year, it might be a really good time to go ahead and do that. But people aren't necessarily aware of who their legislators are or how to contact them. And I would like to refer people, if you wonder who your legislators are, you could actually just visit apvonline.org. That's the Alliance for Progressive Values. At apvonline.org. And in the upper right-hand corner of that homepage are links where you can find the names and contact information for your legislators in Washington and in Richmond. And I thought that was a very useful thing for the APV to do. But how did the APV come about? How did y'all come to form the Alliance for Progressive Values? It seems like something whose time has come.
Absolutely. Actually, you know, I was lucky enough to fall into it after several people had found themselves so frustrated by what was going on in Wisconsin. Frustrated followed by awe and respect for how progressives in Wisconsin pulled together and, you know, created a force that had to be reckoned with. And you know, we felt that it was time for Virginia to take the bull by the horns. I mean, the last state election really didn't go so well if you're a progressive. And, you know, for the first time in many, many years, the Republican Party has control over the mansion and both houses. And I think we're seeing the impact of that, and we're feeling how frightening that can be. Mm-hmm. So I do think, you know, our time has come. We have enjoyed a huge growth in membership, and especially people have rallied around these recent issues related to women's health. We also have a very active a group that's looking at issues related to nuclear energy, other issues related to the environment. And, you know, people who feel like, you know, I think citizens start to feel frustrated, like, you know, everybody's so split in so many ways, and I don't have time to go down to the GA, I don't have time to call my representative. And that's a reality for a lot of people. But the Alliance for Progressive Values, you know, we're giving our members' values a voice. We can't do it all, but I think it is a nice way for people to be a part of an organization that has their back in terms of representation, you know, with our local and national representatives.
I really appreciate that. Yes. And I feel like we're coming to the end of our time together, and we are in the middle of our fund drive, which will be another opportunity for people to join the APV and WRIR. To participate in discussion, please email your thoughts to sunny@wrir.org. And Lightly on the Ground Radio is a Sunny Gardner production for Richmond Independent Radio, broadcast on WRIR LP FM 97.3 and WRIR.org, and occasionally elsewhere. I'm grateful to all the volunteers at Richmond Independent Radio and to our community of donors and underwriters who have bought us all this equipment for making radio. And you can befriend us on Facebook while you're visiting APV on Facebook at Lightly on the Ground Radio, so you will know who will appear on the show and when podcasts become available. The theme music is Bonefire Dance by Rattlemouth, and the incidental music was Mavis Staples singing Have a Little Faith. And I hope you'll join us again on the radio. Until then, walk in the light and live lightly on the ground. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Ann Hardy, for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, get the word out.
All right, power to the people.
Thanks a lot.